So I was doing this meditation work and was really enjoying it and wanting to do more of it and seeing how difficult it was to get it to happen and how tenuous. If administration got upset with Leanne or the mental health staff, it was over. It was, you know, sorry. And then we'd go back to pleading to get it started again. So I thought, well, I'd like to do this, but I'd like, you know, they're not real amenable to wandering Buddhists coming in off the street offering their services. You know, you got to know some local people working on this. It can be tricky. So I thought, well, I'll go back to school. So I went and applied to the counseling psychology program, which is the program that Leanne had gone through, and got accepted into that. And so what I thought I'd do with that degree was try to do some research and show if this meditation group that I was facilitating was actually effective at reducing people's anger. So that was my master's thesis, evaluating an anger management group for incarcerated adults. And I did that at a medium, low security prison outside of town. I went there because I thought that the population would be more stable. The jail population turns over a lot. And I got a lot of cooperation, actually, from the staff there, and was able to, men who were mandated to take anger management were able to be in my group and have their requirement fulfilled. And then I also got a lot of volunteers who just heard about the group and said, oh, I'd like to come. And so we ended up doing that, and when you do an experiment like that, you have a treatment group and a control group. Group people who are in the group and those who are not. But ethically, you can't offer treatment to one group of people and not to another. So then when you finish with the first group, then you run the next group. But they don't add to your data. So then if you need more people, then you have to go through that again. So I went through that a couple times. And we did measurements on the experience of anger, so how frequently, how intense, what kinds of situations make you angry. And also measurements on empathy and narcissism. I chose empathy because it's the closest thing in Western psychology that we have to Buddhist notions of love and compassion. And they're not the same. You can be terribly empathic and not do anything with that, or not really care. So sometimes sociopaths are described as empathic people who feel this pain of another person, but rather than being distressed by it, feel good about it. But it's the closest thing that we have to a measurement, and the empathy being that ability to a cognitive empathy of seeing the world from another person's shoes, and emotional concern. One is when I see somebody sad, I have concerned feelings for them. Questions like that. And then narcissism comes from Narcissus, the guy who fell in love with his own picture in the water, reflection in the water. But so there's some narcissism in Western psychology that's considered to be healthy, and then there's some that's not. And the not part is a willingness to exploit others for your own benefit, and an entitlement attitude, like I deserve more, or I deserve what I get at the exclusion of other people getting it. So I thought that those were pretty reasonable measures that were related to the interest that I have from being a Buddhist practitioner. And the results of that study actually showed that people in the group, as a group, their narcissistic attitudes decreased, and that was related to the decrease that they reported in their anger. So there's some statistical methods that you can use to sort of show the relationship between the narcissism and the anger and the treatment. So the treatment affected their anger directly, unrelated to their narcissistic attitudes, but part of the reduction in anger had to do with the reduction in narcissistic attitudes. What we didn't find was any change in empathy. And that was a surprising result. That's what I do this all the time. I keep going back to it. I'm actually just submitted a proposal for a grant to go back and do a much larger study to look at that. But other people, at least one other group of people, have administered this empathy questionnaire to inmates and found that they score high on it. I first thought, oh, I've got a bunch of people who don't relate to empathy because they're incarcerated men. Right? My stereotype went right back, even after 3 years of experience of bucking that. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, they just weren't willing to endorse a question like, when I see somebody who is sad, I feel sad. But it turned out that wasn't the case at all. They scored so high on the instrument that there wasn't much room for them to go anywhere. Why do they score high on empathy anyhow? And I I think that people who are suffering are more likely to be empathic. So it didn't, you know, it didn't entirely surprise me that they scored high, because if I were to ask you a question right now about sort of your social orientation, this room and this experience would impact your answers. You would probably, unless I made it clear for you to think about another context when you're at work or at home, you would immediately answer in, you know, how you're feeling right now. And so I think that the men probably respond thinking about the people who they most identify with, who are their other inmates and their families who are suffering as a result of them being there. So I think they really are empathic. One question I have is, does that generalize? If I was to specify a domain, you know, answer this relevant to the people that you are living with in your cell, answer this relevant to the people who are controlling you, answer this to relevant to the people who, you know, who you worked for before you came or whatever, then that would be interesting. That would be an interesting question. And so I think what I'd get is a lot of variability, and then the task would be to help people generalize, generate motivation. Why would it be beneficial maybe to have the same sort of empathy that you have for your friends for other people? Every once in a while, almost inevitably in a group that I run, I'll have a guy who will pipe up and say something about the guards having a tough life and have some compassion for them. You know, and I just sit there and go, yes, thank you, because I can't say that. You know, it would mean meaningless for me to suggest that to this hostile crowd of people. They would just see me as one of them and blow it off. It wouldn't mean anything. But when one of them says it, it carries a lot of weight. And so it's, you know, and it's reality, so it's helpful when that happens.